perdonarte.
All right, this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today is an incredible day because so many news are coming. July 29, 2015, and it's Wednesday, and it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. Good morning, the West Coast. It's 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel. We have so many things evolving, and you know, news after another. And the Italian music that we're gonna let you hear today is some news or some old one, something that reminds us all that we are in the summer, and in the summer you travel elsewhere. And what a better place to travel if it's not Italy? Italy with its classical music, its great food, great fashion, great art, a lot of wonderful street to visit, you know, with the enormous statues that you can discover every time again, and with the fountain that have running water, which is very cold, but you're not allowed to put your feet inside, so remember that. And the you know, Europe is magnificent at this time of the year, especially because the rain is, you know, just a little, so it's not always too hot. You can walk the street. Tourists from all over the world come together to shop. You can find the Chinese, the Japanese, the Mediterranean, the French, the American. Oh, the American, they are the cutest. To see them in the street of Europe running around with the checkered Bermuda and their, you know, little hat, and of course a computer to translate how much is the money. They are amazing because they go else, you know, and they're so tall usually. And in Europe, you know, the people are really tiny and they're not too tall. So you can recognize the American from miles away. And I always smile when I see them because, you know, that's the world. And this is what we're doing when we go on vacation. And if we stop fighting and if we stop, you know, having war, maybe we can enjoy it. Just imagine today the French foreign ministry, Fabius, visited Iran. They're talking about business. They're talking about what's going to happen after the sanction will be lifted. And, of course, the deal, politics, and all the rest. And the Iranian insists that they keep on being hostile to the rest of people that are not as they are. They decided to keep on the fight and help all those organizations that are against Israel and the Jewish state, and of course the Saudis. So the Shiite Sunnis going to fight and keep it going. So I don't know what the French are doing there yet, so close and for comfort, but maybe it's a good start, you know, let them jump in the water and see what happens. Because at the end of the day, we need to give everybody a break and let them have a chance to get out of their cycle of violence. Because remember, Iran wasn't an enemy of Israel 30 years ago. And we remember we had so much going on with the Iran-Contra affair that we forgot that something went wrong there. And we don't know all the details. Of course, everybody have a speculation of what happened then, but, you know, it's over. It's history. It's all, you know, whoever was a part of it is done in business. And, you know, I'm not sure, you know, the world wants to know more. The only thing is they want to start talking again. But I suggest that we ask them to release all those prisoners that they have, because the Iranians tend to keep prisoners for 20 years, enough to throw them, like like nothing happened out. They did that with many Iraqis that they hold hostage. It's funny how this conversation is going places that I didn't mean to talk about. But really, we still have hostages in Iran, American hostages. We're still looking for Ron Arad, the pilot that disappears and many years ago. And by all means, we can be alive and well there. So we still hope to have some kind of livelihood. And there is a belief in the Jewish faith that if somebody is still alive in your heart, it probably is alive, because God gave us the tendency to forget, because if not, we couldn't go on in life. We forget. I hope we remember to rescue all those hostages. Anyway, let's go to some Italian music, and after we'll be back.
Si avesse fatta notte, quella che hai fatto a me, somma t'avesse accesa, e vuoi sapere perché? Perché in coppa sta terra, femmina come te.
All right, we are back. That was a joke song, as I see it. It's not a real, you know, message that I want to send you. This is Malla Femmina. You know, they're talking about women that break men's heart. So they're talking about them and said, oh, my God, you have a face of an angel, but you are using it to, you know, to cheat us from with the sugar from health, I guess. You know, the art of loving in Italy is an art and culture. So for them, using a weapon, so-called weapon, as a sweetness and a face of angel, is a trade. So it's a trademark. So nothing massive, nothing incredible. He just, you know, woman that does what she does. So this is as far as goes, as some funny music goes. That's classical that I used to listen to it, you know, in every piano bar. They'll say, you know, when they like to sing and talk about what they did to us, the girls. Yeah, you know, every country with their loving. But anyway, there was a flight of Alitalia that held fire and in the airport. For some reason, it was a very major concern. So in Fiumicino airport, there was smoke that was really, really scary, and they grounded the plane. But thank God everything is good, and they tweet out that everything is under control, and the blades are now gone. Thank God for that, because, you know, airports are most traffic. My Fiumicino is Leonardo da Vinci, I guess, airport is a very busy one. And there is things that happen, but more of this. We got sound bites, tons of sound bites that you need to listen to. Okay, let's listen to the next one.
Il giorno poi del tuo ritorno. Sei così sicura del mio amore da portarlo via con te, chiuso nelle mani che ti porti al viso, ripensando ancora a me. E se ti servirà, lo mostri al mondo che non sa che vita c'è. Nel cuore che distratto sembra assente.
If that took so much time and so much hard work, that was exactly because we were all very much aware of the fact that we needed to have a strong, solid agreement, leaving nothing to further interpretation or discussion, but very detailed and ready for implementation. From the moment when we will start to see the agreement implemented, we will also have to tackle the issue of the regional dynamics, the many conflicts we have in front of us, and Iranian stand in these regional dynamics.
For terrorism, especially with the activity of Iranian revolutionary.
عم برتكلم عليها عن استنكار المملكة ورفض المملكة لتصريحات العدوانية التي أتت من عدد من المسؤولين في إيران والذي تتعلق بتثبت تدخلات إيران في الشأن الداخلي لدول المنطقة. كما استنكرنا موضوع التهديدات أو التصريحات التي أدلى بها مسؤولين إيرانيين تجاه الأشقاء في البحرين، وهذا أيضا أمرا لا نقبله ونرفضه، ونعتقد أنه لا يمثل رغبة دولة تسعى لحسن الجوار، بل يمثل دولة لها طموح في المنطقة وتقوم بتصرفات عدوانية مثل هذه.
We are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. It's today. It's with Italian music. It's Wednesday, of course. Now, that part was not translated, and so I apologize for that, because Mogherini was really one of the most incredible women that was behind the deal with the Iranian, and she sat with days in and day out with John Kerry, with all the 5+1 group, and she handled it quite so well. And she was trying to listen to the voices and try to promote it. And as sure enough, she signed the deal with the Iranian. She flew in directly to the Saudis to talk about the problem there, because the truth of the matter is the Iran deal does not please the Saudis. We can understand that the Saudis and the Israeli want to be a part of you know, the understanding in some format, that they need to have some kind of control of what happens if Iran will break the rules. And the Saudis, they are much more powerful as far as how much they reach out. They have madrasas all over the place. You know, the Sunnis are famous. They're very powerful with their oil, and they have a lot of resources. It's not Israel. It's the condition that they are facing with the hostility of Iran. And those Iranian, when they signed the deal, they need to take in consideration that they better act up well according to the accord, and not against the Saudis. which the repercussion can be enormous for everyone. So everybody is trying to ship, you know, to go and chaperone the Saudis at this forum to see what can be understood from them. I know that they'll be wise as they always been. And, you know, the Iranian was telling, oh, we had the Hezbollah, one of the Hezbollah guys. I said one because they're a group and they're all, you know, they're guerrillas fighters, and they don't have an army. Of course, they are part of the Lebanon government right now. So the head of the Hezbollah was saying that the Israeli and, you know, been starting to have some kind of comfort zone with the neighborhood. What do you think? What do you think? You know, you think that Israel will be here and not do anything to, you know, to help, you know, the neighborhood if we have the same enemy? Of course we will. We will help each other and we'll be there. And, you know, they bombarded Syria today. But I don't understand Turkish when they are starting to bombard themselves in the north with the excuse that they are bombarding ISIS when they're actually bombarding the Kurds and overlooking their agreement, the ceasefire agreement that they had with the Kurds. The PKK, how they call that organization, or the initial of their Kurds organization, they had an agreement, and the Turks are overlooking it. And they started to create some buffer zone in the north, and the Iraqis are really, really upset now because they are overlooking the Iraqi sovereignty. So I said it before, and I said it again. The Turks are going to have it in their home because you cannot play in both sides. You cannot let ISIS pass by you or traffic from Iran to Syria and then come to the West and pretend that you're goody two-shoes, you're Western, and you're going to help us or whatever. You give us the chance to come and comfort us and park our airplanes. Not going to happen like that. You know, they are starting a war and somebody's going to get very, very upset in Iraq soon if they keep on doing what they're doing. So the Turks are coming into a new age. They were powerful. They were as powerful as Israel, you know, connection gave them. Because to be with Israel means you be in America. With America, it means that you give you power. Once you start to turn around in Israel, you turn around in America, because it comes with the territory. You cannot play one against the other. And then soon enough, you're losing ground. And after you lose ground, you try to, you know, sabotage some other stuff that's going around. And sure enough, the Turks are going to pay it. Whoever is going to pay in this round of hostility, the Turks are going to pay the price. Because mathematically, they outplay themselves, you know, and that's what it is. Anyway, we want to go on and have some more music, of course, but if we have a sound bite, that will be good, because I know that business is good these days, you know, to make with European companies, and sometimes it can save the day. So let's see what we have.
Teenager's body found on Eurotunnel train. The body of a teenager was found on a Eurotunnel train travelling from Calais to the UK on Thursday. At around 4:13 a.m, police were called to the Channel Tunnel terminal in Folkestone, after the body of a male teenager was discovered on a Eurotunnel train. It is believed the teenager was a migrant attempting to enter the UK, and had tried to get onto the train while it was travelling at high speed. Investigators said it is likely the teen died in France and his body was carried through the tunnel before it was found. It is not uncommon for migrants to try to reach the UK from France by jumping onto trains. Apart from calling on the UK and French governments to end the migrant crisis, Eurotunnel has also printed posters warning people of the dangers posed by such actions.
Leave an insightful comment on tomonews.net and you could win up to $500 every month.
All right. That was a sad story about one of the immigrants that got caught in the tunnel trying to reach the United Kingdom. Yes, it is a problem with immigration. Yes, there is a problem between countries in France, and of course, people are trying to do their best to have a better life, and Europeans have to come to grip with the reality that you know, the war that nobody cared for in the beginning, what happened in Syria in 2013. Of course, America cared, but we wanted to go to war, and it wasn't actually conducive to go to war to kill more people. I think that they are paying the price of the immigration now, and they are in Italy, of course, and in Europe. Once they're in Europe, they can, you know, emerge to other countries. I'm not sure they're going to go that north, but they tried to go to England, and that's what happened to them. So just remember, those are lost souls of the universe, and they come to your doorstep, Europe, and you should find a way to help them. By all means, it's not easy, but they come from a war. They are in the middle of a war. Don't use you know, the regular I don't care routine. You need to care. This is our world. We all depend on each other. So begging for them for some mercy and some God help. To save them and to find some comfort to those in need everywhere, and bring some peace to this universe, because we're so tired of it. We're really tired of it. Israel does not have a time of peace. Of course, you know that Syria is in shambles because of their own stubbornness. Those guerrillas of Hezbollah, which they are in the tunnels and they are in a building and they are outspoken so much, but they're trashing Lebanon again and again on their way. The Iraqis' war of 10 years, you know, how they stole and they need to settle. I don't know how they're going to go about it. Iran is coming out of the woodwork, but I don't know if it's going to work, but at least we have some progress. We have Yemen that is in shambles, which is time. Tunis had a little crisis recently. Libya is supposed to have an agreement, a deal, you know, that should be, but there were some kind of standoff to see who's going to get who. And Jordan is calling, you know, they're asking for collaboration to have some sort of friendship alliances between our countries. And we are very happy to do so. But the truth of the matter, if there is a threat, it's coming from elsewhere. And they need to know. They need to know that we have a threat that's called the Palestinian people. And, you know, more we go along and more they start evolving with their story, the more you start putting, you know, some points or commas in their dialogue and their delivery. And you start asking the actual question that really matters. On what base the Palestinians are claiming the Palestinian territory? Sounds funny, right? What base have the Palestinian people, they call themselves Palestinian, to claim the land of Palestine. Now, the land of Palestine were named Palestine by the Roman. The Roman decided to call it after the name of Philistine, the one, you know, the David and Goliath. Remember the story? David and Goliath were facing each other. David, King David, threw a stone, and the big giants of the Philistine fell down and died. David won. That was it, the story. Now, he was carrying us, but, you know, in the Bible, God is always just, and he's just in such a way that he gives us the rule of engagement. He doesn't let us say, okay, we don't care, you're nobody. The Palestine, they belong to Gaza Strip, and this is always Gaza. It will be always theirs. There is no question about it. That's why when they relieve us from that, you know, honor to be there, that was God's way. This is, you know, their territory. Not a question about it, biblical speaking. But then, to the rest of the land, they're claiming, and you know, the audacity for them to come to Jerusalem, to the holy site of all, and say, you go, you have no, to the Jews, you have no place here. You, Palestine, that have never had a land, if you're not Turk, that used to have the territory before the British mandate was given over. You have no right to be, you know, the Turk were before the English, and the English were here only to reposition the territory and to pass it to the Jews. And before the Turks, so what we had? We had years of nobody. It was from the 70 after Christ. Well, I'm using the numbers, the European numbers, to tell you to claim. The Jews were exiled. They went to exile. You know, 70 after the destruction of the temple, the year 70, to the counting. And since then, they were wandering and always praying every day, the next year in Jerusalem, the next year in Jerusalem. And there were people in the land, and the land was devastated. The Turks, the Ottoman Empire, of course, did not nothing. That's why they got the lost the land, because it was treated very bad. And I know I'm missing one part of history. I want to give it to you, and trust me, I will soon. I want to say, so on one, what position the world, the old world, is gathering, you know, with this rhetoric that unheard of, constant. You need to give a Palestinian state. I'm sorry, give the Kurds a state, okay? The Armenian, they deserve a state. Give the Kurds first, 30 million. They are Kurdistan, famous. That was famous. You know, every country has the right to claim its own, but the Palestinians, the non-existent people, and you guys coming to me and said, I am occupier. I don't occupy anything. You know, the land, Jerusalem was, you know, was conquered by the Jordanians in some form of agreement with the British people in charge. Just remember, when they gave the Jewish people the home, Balfour Declaration, 1917, they gave the Jewish people a homeland, and that homeland was supposed to be in the land of Palestine. That's why when the Jews came, they all had, you know, they had Palestinian passport, because that was the land of Palestine that was given to them by the League of Nations, by the decree of Balfour Declaration. And then ratified in the United Nations in 1947. But in 1933, the Brits cut an agreement with the Saudis Sheikh, and they said, okay, let's take a part of that territory to be too big for the Jews or whatever. You know, how deals are going. Then I need a piece of land, you know, before you bring those Jews from Europe that they almost, you know, they don't need so much land. You know how the deal is like when the land is on the table. Please give us it. You know, we need a little territory. It's not much. It's 3/4 of the land of Palestine then. Give it to the Jordanian. We call it Transjordan. You know, nobody will pay attention. That'll be okay. And the Jews, after coming from the ashes of Holocaust, do you think they have the power to argue? You give me that, okay, fine. Because we trust in God. Nothing you can do about it. They took a half or more, and they gave it to Transjordan, and Jerusalem was a part of it. But, when they gave, when the United Nations in 1947, they said the resolution 181, they said, we're going to give this land to the Jewish people, and the other side, is, and we divide it, and we'll give it to the people of the land. They didn't have a name. They didn't call them Palestinian. They called them the habitat of the land, because those people were nomads. So were they coming and they're going. It's like the Bedouin. And, you know, it's funny because today I heard that the Bedouin are also starting to be, you know, owners of the lands in the Negev, in the south of Israel, which Bedouin, by definition, are nomads. They never stay in one place. They don't own any territory. But no, the Palestinians, they own it, they own a land. You occupy, you who? What you guys are telling yourself, what you are all smoking, for God's sake, how in the heart you can create the false, the lie of the century. This is the biggest lie of all, to have a Palestinian people who had never had a state. They took the name over. And, you know, if you look at their religion, the religion is of one God. They believe in one God, but for some reason, they're calling themselves the land of Abraham. The God of Abraham is the God, of course, because Ishmael was the son of Abraham. But then they forget all the learning from Abraham. They're gone. They took off. And when they took off, they decided, you know, it's better to die than to leave. And, oh, you know, in the process, kill your brother too. We're brothers. We are brothers. They decided to exile us from their lives. They didn't want us. But not just this. Jibril Rajoub, the guy that was supposed to be the next leader of the Palestinians, yesterday was saying, if he had a nuclear bomb, he will set it on today. They had threatened us with extinction yesterday. Their leadership threatened Israel. As far as I'm concerned, we owe them nothing. We owe those so-called people of the land of Palestine, because they are no Palestinian. They are the land, the people of the land called Palestine. They have no rights in my book. And they have no rights because they didn't earn it right. They could have got an agreement. If they respected it in 181 in 1947, they decided, no, we'll go back and we'll throw you all to the sea. Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, try again. We'll go again. Yes, try again. Now we get also Jerusalem. Now we get stronger, and we'll get stronger because the God of Israel is God, and it's not us, and it's not for you all to decide what he wants to do. Now you tell us, or you claim us. We owe you guys an agreement. You want to boycott us? You want to boycott all your telephone with all the chips, the Jewish bit, you know, brain that you use and you use to make all the businesses, to make all your accounting. You got to use us, of course. I mean, they're all like, boycott them. Give us a break. We are like, you know, the hard labor of the world, and we are the people who are supposed to bring the light to this world. And we are here because God wants us here, and it's nobody's business if he wants this or that. You know, Mark Twain once said, he said, "Our honor of God to choose the Jews." Oh, really? Mark Twain was a brilliant man. But this was one thing in history that won't keep him as bright in my book. You know, something about God. He is God. Can do nothing about it, you like it or not. So let's get some music so we lighten up some hair here.
Inverno, il sole stanco a letto, presto se ne va, non ce la fa più.
All right, that's such a classic. Marche Fredofa, what it's called. It's nada. It's a 60s song. It's a classic that, you know, bring good memories of the good time when they used to dance, twist on the beach. But, you know, until we can go back to our, you know, being humanity as at its best, we have to have some news like this one. Let's talk about the news that we just learned today.
Afghan government and security sources say the fugitive leader of the Taliban, Mullah Omar, is dead. Well, very important breaking news here. Let's get some more on it. Waheed Massoud is the BBC's bureau chief in Kabul. Waheed, what have the government sources been saying to you?
Well, sources very high up in the government, close to Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and CEO Abdullah, and high up source in the Afghan security institutions claim that the Taliban fugitive leader Mullah Muhammad Omar is dead. In fact, they say he has been dead for the past 2 years. There have been similar reports in the past, but it is for the first time that high ranking Afghan government officials are coming forward and confirming that Mullah Omar is not alive anymore. The timing of this news is very important. It comes just days before the second round of official face-to-face talks of the Afghan government with the Taliban insurgents.
Okay, so we're just establishing your picture again. I mean, if ever the word fugitive were appropriate, it would apply to Mullah Omar. I mean, we've had reports that he might be dead many times before. What does it tell us, if indeed these reports are correct, that he has indeed been dead for 2 years? It's been 2 years of resurgent Taliban as well, hasn't it?
True. Even among the Taliban ranks, there has been disagreements over the matter. A number of Taliban commanders in southern Afghanistan several months ago said that it has been many years. One of them said it has been 10 years. They haven't heard from their leader, and that's why they switched sides and they announced allegiance with the IS, with the Islamic Movement Group in Afghanistan that has just appeared. There were also reports of two different groups emerging within the Taliban, one being led by his deputy and the other by the 26-year-old son of Mullah Omar himself. We are expecting an official confirmation of this news within an hour or two by the Afghan government. But if this is confirmed, it will have very significant impact on the peace talks and on the insurgency itself.
Right, and perhaps it's worth just reflecting on Mullah Omar, the impact, the power, the influence of this man on the Taliban and on the movement.
Yes, because Mullah Omar was seen as a spiritual leader. He was not directly involved in running the insurgency, but the man on the ground, the insurgent, always believed that he's fighting for the supreme leader, which is Mullah Omar. Now, if the news is confirmed, this will indeed have an impact on the same Taliban foot soldiers who, over the past 2 years, may have fought under the belief, the pretext that he is alive, but now his death may be a game changer.
And when you say, Waheed, that if this is confirmed, it will have a direct influence.
All right. It's 2 years that they're saying is dead, and obviously he is dead. So it's, you know, news like this is saying, you know, it's enough. Enough with all this leadership of aggressive behavior. The world can do better. We have the way, we have the means, you know, electronics and all. We just need to bring people closer to together and help them through the day, and maybe we can be better people. Now, talking about the future, we have things evolving, and I want to have another soundbite for you to hear.
The dress rehearsal went without a hitch. The same is hoped for the World Cup draw and indeed the tournament in 3 years' time. Russia has high hopes for hosting football's biggest showpiece.
It's important that Russia puts on a good show.
The World Cup means a lot to Russia. It'll bring investment and new stadiums.
The 2018 World Cup opener and final will be staged in Moscow. The Luzhniki Stadium will be modernized on time for the games. In all, a further 10 cities will stage World Cup matches, from Kaliningrad in the west to Yekaterinburg in the Urals. Spanning 3,000 kilometers and four time zones, the World Cup in Russia will put a new spin to the term massive. Although the budget for the event has been slashed by 430 million euros, stadium construction is ahead of schedule.
The World Cup motto is heart and soul. That's why we're aiming to organize the best World Cup in history.
Russian football is, however, mired with problems both on and off the pitch. Corruption allegations surrounding the successful 2018 bid haven't gone away, and the domestic league has been hit by fan violence and racist incidents. The national team is performing under par. That led to coach Fabio Capello's sacking.
Russia has many great teams, unfortunately not in football though.
Russia's national team has time to get back to its winning ways. As hosts, they're automatically qualified, unlike their rivals for football's greatest title.
All right, are we going to have some Mondial on the hands of the Russian? That will keep them busy until 2018, and I hope it's going to be a good one, because as we learn, Michel Platini is going to head the FIFA, Confederation of Football, you know, it's soccer in the American way, and it's going to be incredible, because Michel Platini is one of the most prestigious football players that we had in the century, and it, of course, it's going to make a wonder, and if it's going to be in Russia, we're going to have fun and something to look, because I remember when they had the game, the Sochi game in Russia, when the winter game, we were really worried, but they managed to have a great success. You see, if we want to bring the world together, we need to play hard. And there is nothing like sports to unite us. I know that the world make you know, the Olympic as the showcase for sports, but you know, I know what men think about soccer and about, you know, football, and they respect it so much, and I'm sure that they would respect it, because a good soccer game, football game, is a really something that, you know, makes the world war with happiness. And a good show like we had, you know, in the last Mondial was amazing, and the music is incredible, and the people come along, family travel, elsewhere, I think it's going to be good for the economy of Russia. The Russian economy needs some awakening and, of course, some agreement if we won't be so stubborn on detail. We need to make sure that we have some kind of cooperation. And as the Russians said, it's time to come to the table with the Americans and open the time. But, you know, I think that Russians already are doing it with John Kerry. And I remember when Senator, then Secretary Hillary Clinton pushed the red button on, you know, startup, restart on the Russian-American relationship. She maybe thought to restart it, but she didn't do much about it. And now that we're talking about the new president contender and Donald Trump is running so high in the polls, because he got the money, of course he got the charm. Let's not forget it. He's really talented, and I always liked him and loved him from the business part. But and I always would love to give a hand to him to explain to him one thing: politics is not business. And anybody who thinks that politics is the same way as businesses does not know the game. And I've been through my life, through the political life and through the business life. I enjoy much more the business, because in the business it's mathematic, and you know, you make an agreement, you pay. In the politics, they cheat. They just cheat. They cheat you out of agreement. They cheat you out of understanding. They cheat you out of what you understood. They cheat you out of your vote. They cheat you out of everything. So it's not a business for, you know, honest, good businessmen, which even that is so rich because he worked hard. And, of course, once you work hard and you do again and again and again and you make sure that, you know, all your family is involved, you invest in yourself, you'll be rich. There is no question, especially in America. America is the land of opportunity, for real. America is the greatest nation in the world because it's for real. It's not funny. It's not a cheater. It's not, you know, you go to the bank, you can calculate. I remember calculating always. I knew how much I have in the bank because America is that straight. Even that, you know, you want to have, of course, enormous bank accounts, and you know, it takes a lot of effort. But at the end of the day, it's an honest business. When Donald Trump wants to run to be a president of America, and you don't know the rest of the world politics, you think that 2 years it took John Kerry to set an agreement. Think that you need to build up a business. You know, if in 2 years just to get an agreement to sign up for it, it's still not the same. You can get mad and throw somebody out of the door, or you know, tell him it's fire. This is the world. So at the end of the game, the GOP is winning by money. His problem is that he's running faster than the press. Sure, soon enough they will have to come to escort him on his jet in order for him, you know, to have covered, because he cannot fly faster than they can follow. Or he can have such a media routine that he can tell everybody to stop, you know, to spread in 50 states, you know, media, and have its quota in every place, which is easy to make. You know, anybody who makes, okay, everybody who can, you know, can do, you know, economy can calculate how to make something like that. But the truth of the matter is that we need, you know, somebody to be to run for nomination on the other side, because what's the alternative? You're going to give us Hillary, which has, you know, Benghazi, and she has all those emails, and she has all the fundraising, whatever, and she's not so popular with a lot of people in America. So I think that, you know, the Democrats, she's going to lose it, and the Republican having somebody who's not so political is a problem, and then you have Rubio that is a rookie, which is a sweetheart, and the old youngster, you know, in the rest of the world, they're really fighter, but Rubio is a fighter, but he's a softy. You know, it's not the Italian prime minister that, you know, go and throw punches. So you guys have to shuffle back the deck as America. Forget, I'm only looking at America as a whole. Like I always did. I'm a Republican by definition, because I believe in God, and every time the Democrats will want to doubt God of their, you know, existence, for me, I reject that. But think about somebody else. And Kerry, of course, he must be one of the nominee, because he must. He cannot not have him. He's running the deal. He's actually the guy that has the chip in his hand, holding it. So if you don't pass, you pass it, it's like you guys don't know who's going to run the show with one deal. Actually, thinking about it, it's like nobody else can run the show. So I think that we're running out of time, and we want to salute you with a great song, a love song from the Italian music that I prepare for you. I, as usual, I have run out of time, and before I had everything to tell you, but I just remind you all that this is a space for you to be with me and to understand that God exists and we love Him and we pray for you, and I hope that this blessing come in your house and your place, and you have a wonderful summer. Enjoy yourself. Be happy. And we'll talk the next time on Sunday morning, 7 a.m. West Coast. God bless you all. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Thank you.
Chiudo gli occhi e penso a lei. Il profumo dolce della pelle sua è una voce dentro che mi sta portando dove nasce il sole. Sole sono le parole, ma se vanno scritte tutto può cambiare. Senza più timore te lo voglio.